Hey, Rob.
Hey, Jersey.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to play ping pong with our greetings for a second there.
Oh, no. I'm matching your enthusiasm.
Hey, I'm here and I'm ready to laugh. So tell me about this Holidazzle thing, Rob. You have a parade. You have a Holidazzle parade and you didn't tell me this.
True. And I have actually never witnessed it in person. I know of it via TV commercials of my youth. And I know that actually my day job is having a holiday party where it's actually situated right next to the Holidazzle, part of the design of the event. So it turns out I'll be seeing the Holidazzle finally, which I assumed that since you brought this up, like, oh, I bet, you know, Ann Arbor has like in the Holidazzle comics parade where it's like super awesome.
Like, of course. Yeah, actually, you know, like when you enter the city limits, it says, welcome to Ann Arbor Comics. And then, yeah, no, we don't have anything like that. We're like the Holidazzle, for those who haven't heard of this, it's like the electric light parade from Disneyland. They put lights all over the floats and the floats go down the street. We had this in Phoenix when I lived there, but Michigan, I have yet to see it. So jealous, very jealous.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of great pictures. It looks really cool. You know, it's like if you like holiday lights, it's like a whole bunch of that on big shapes moving by you. So
so now that I've chased away anybody who came here looking for an art podcast, welcome to the Lean Into Art Show. Yes, this is indeed the final Lean Into Art episode of 2012. And what is it if you're new to the show and if you're still here after I talk about Holidazzle? It is a show where two visual storytellers get together and walk around a difficult topic. We start out with some curveball, try to challenge one another, and then we zoom out 10,000 feet up, discuss things from an abstract point of view, and then we zoom to hit the ground running with some practical usages based on the thinking strategies that we explored in 1,000 feet up. And then we close with a couple of takeaways where we go home with a few thoughts from our art week. My name is Jersey Drozd, and that other fella...
I am Rob Stenzinger, and I enjoy the takeaways because it's like having leftovers that you can always warm up later on.
I think I left my takeaway in the fridge last week, and God willing, we'll have time today. But I got to say, for the record, you prepared a pretty extensive and robust batch of notes here, Rob. So this is going to be signal to noise ratio. I think it's going to be pretty high. And who knows if we're going to have time to even goof around as we reflect on 2012 and prepare and gird ourselves for 2013. That time of year, I guess, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, the end of the year or, anytime you know, your local culture observes the calendar changing over, where that's sometime in, when is Chinese New Year? Somewhere in like late winter or something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so essentially, yeah, it's a big milestone. I would assume from watching media and whatnot, you know, people get all reflective and sometimes stressed out from the holidays and or put to some kind of test that makes them just get introspective and go, all right, what happened this year and what the heck do I want to have happen next year?
Yeah, well, it's natural, right? It's the clock is striking 12 once again, and yeah. we're being reminded of the passage of time. And it's only natural that we would say, hey, it's been another year. What happened this year? Where do I want to be next year? A lot of us think this way.
I know it seems super, it's not supernatural. It seems super natural, but
natural to the extreme.
It's extra awesome natural. But at the same time, I know like there's kind of a bit of an oil and water mix on this where there are those that, well, some people really love holiday lights and things like Holidazzle and whatnot. And others say, bah humbug, no thank you. This holiday planning is for suckers, which I think is a natural lead into the curveball.
Okay. Yes, please. I'm going to count on you to act as the, as I said before we started recording, that take the captain's wheel on this, because this is definitely sure. Your wheelhouse. I should say that I just got a wonderful holiday card or solstice card from the Stenzinger residence. First of all, awesome picture of you and Kaya and Kate all doing the...
Yeah.
I don't know how you got Kaya to do that, but that was awesome. My guess is she just did it naturally. She was like, yeah, this is the pose I'm going to take. Then you guys followed her suit.
Exactly.
But one of the things in the car that you mentioned is this is the time of year where you and Kate, and you've mentioned this on the show before, you and Kate go through this robust session of planning for the next year, reflecting on the year past, planning for the next year. So this is definitely a place where I think you have you've put a lot of effort and thought into this topic. So take it away, Rob. Curveball time.
So curveball time. And I would say I it's funny. Anytime we end up, I know anything I feel like an aficionado of, I think something that I really care a lot about. I notice both other people that care a lot about it and other people that fling, not so nice things at it sometimes. So New Year's resolutions is often associated with this time of year. And like, that's like a, like sort of the at least traditional, stories seem to, I'm trying to think of an example, like New Year's resolutions. Where do we run into that?
I was just grocery shopping the other day. I was just grocery shopping the other day and I'm going through the checkout lane. All the magazine covers are lose weight, get your New Year's diet right.
Okay. Oh gosh. Yeah. TV, fitness, of course. Yep.
Yep. TV, every commercial, this time of year, every year, the quit smoking, smoking cessation products come out of the woodwork. Here's the patch. Here's the electronic cigarette. Here's anything to get you to commit to, your resolution to quit smoking. The big ones, right?
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, basically, so they're playing a lot against, I assume, the father time mortality kind of stuff, especially, where, that thing, that sounds like a lot of fun, but, might lead to the eternal sleep a little too quickly. So, on that happy note, this is what happens when I take the wheel jersey. I'll start zigzagging around, driving like a stuntman. New Year's resolutions get a bad rap. And I would say some of it comes from the opportunistic marketing, probably, right? But I think some of it comes from the same reason why you might want to plan or whatever. But like, okay, I'm doing a terrible job with the curveball because I'm all wired up and excited. So curveball, how do you look at this with the New Year's resolutions and the idea that, you're just a sheep, you're going with the flow, and no one follows through with those things. It's just lame, right? It's like someone being overly anxious, like you have to follow that silly ritual, kiss someone at midnight and then plan that big thing that you'll ignore the next day.
Okay. My answer to that is, and I hate to be set to come across so pat, but there are people who worship in groups. There are people who practice mindful activities as groups, as people go to dojos as groups. There are people who go to dojos, go to worship, and stop every once in a while. Life gets in the way. I didn't get to go to Aikido practice as often as I wanted to, and now I haven't been in a month. Oh, woe is me. I guess I'm a failure. But then they go back, or maybe they don't. But in any case, there are plenty of things where people are just going along with the crowd. And this is coming from the guy who, loves the whole rugged individualist kind of thing. But at the same time, I think there is a value of sorts in ritual. And this is something we talked about in the Meat Party episode a ways back, is I think when you make an accomplishment of some sort, you are honor bound to celebrate it and mark that event someday. RyanEstrada.com. Ryan Estrada saying January 1st is Black Friday for fitness centers. You know what? I bet you he's right.
Totally.
I bet you this is like LA Fitnesses. They're over there going like this right now. But anyway, back to ritual. I think that there is a value in that, in marking achievements and marking and also doing it at certain times, right? However bah humbug you feel, when the holiday season begins, for a lot of us, most of us, even if we aren't Christian, even if we don't celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or any of the specific holidays, that time of year has a certain resonance with us, and it's tied up into our personal histories, it's tied up into our memory, it's tied up into our experiences, and these experiences and ritual comes out of universal experience, right? So they say, why are there so many circles in mythology? Because we watch the sun and the moon go round and round in their balls, and so yes, we associate circles with a lot of things because of our common experiences. So there's a lot wound up in this, and I think it's a little bit dismissive and a little glib to say, oh, you're just being a sheep if you're committing to resolving to do something. The only sin, I think, is when you overcommit, which is why I think a lot of people fail. And I'm done.
You really nailed something right in the end there, because I'm like, ouch. The overcommit thing is certainly something that that I notice.
I'm speaking from a pain point. I'm not speaking as somebody who beat this one.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's not, I suppose if this were a demon hanging out with me, it's certainly not stuffed and mounted on the wall. It's like looming over my shoulder too. In other words, you really got into the angle of, having a common occurrence of something where it makes a shared event, a shared experience. And that alone doesn't make it in superfluous or
I think there is a value to a communal experience of something. There's a value to being, you know, along for a movement or a ride, or knowing that a lot of other people are in the same boat as you. But never forgetting that you're still an individual, right? I just think that there's a value to ritual, and I think it's been proven, and I don't think it's just dumb people who believe in a magic fairy ghost in outer space who created the universe, or whatever, you know, way you want to characterize that kind of thing. I was trying to take the devil's advocate point of view there.
Sure.
There's also the value of that sense of, this is that time to commit to this thing. Now, we got some counterpoints coming up in the notes later on. Against that idea. But I'm just saying that resolutions on January 1st per se are not necessarily a bad thing. If that's what gets you motivated, and, you know, NaNoWriMo, for crying out loud.
Oh, exactly.
30
yeah.
Characters.
Right. We're totally advocates for those. Yeah. For it. I mean, in a way, this is the very old version of a creative challenge. I wonder how long these have been around. What New Year's resolutions? I mean, it's, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I could go to
Wikipedia. Curious to research that.
So did we get through that, the curveball?
No, I think we did. I mean, that was a really didn't anticipate that angle. That's the joy of those the curveballs.
For the folks at home listening, or the folks watching live, if you feel like I didn't properly address that, you can say, well, actually, Jersey, by sending an email to leanintoart@gmail.com, or use the form on the LeanIntoArt website, or if you have a curveball of your own that you want to pitch at us for 2013, feel free to wind it up and try to hit it over the center of the plate and see if we can't take a swing at it or strike ourselves out. You can just record a simple MP3 file and send it to us, and we could play it on the air, actually. Mm-hmm. Or you can just send us an email and we can read it on the air, but make sure you use the form on the website so you can give us permission to read it on the air. We will not read your name and give you web credit unless you tell us that that's okay. So there's the call to action. Now, transition to, you want to talk the LeanIntoArt biography?
All right. So when I was working on some of my own planning, preparing. So you mentioned one of the yearly rituals in my family is centered around doing some reflective planning and looking ahead right around the solstice holiday. And my wife and I have been doing this for years, and now we're working on involving our daughter into it and all that, which is that's always a fun learning experience. You have no idea how that'll turn out. She's just three. So, it's, let's see. I was facing that coming up. Like some years I don't plan that much before the event, and it's almost like last minute, shopping for gifts, because I'm kind of, you know, frazzled, panicked, and preparing whatever. and all at the same time, and then trying to come up with something meaningful, both looking back and looking forward. So this year I was working ahead. I mean, I think I'm a little over a week ahead of time as far as, you know, getting ready for this thing, right? And in the working ahead, it started to, there's like a couple of things. Like one of my interests in this year with my user experience consulting is I've been really getting into the idea of journalistic research and data journalism and disciplines surrounding it, and how do they overlap with being an intentional creative person. And all of a sudden this stuff started leaking in and bleeding into my planning's sessions over this last weekend. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, wait a minute. I'm like coming up with questions to ask myself. Anyway, so I got excited where I'm like, this is kind of a method evolution thing. And that kind of, that and what we'll get into during the 1,000 feet up section is what led to this episode and the overall metaphor of it for it, which I think is essentially, instead of thinking of planning as just like an ingredient toward a project or a goal, or even if the reflection aspect of it, it's almost like coming up with your own biography.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was really surprised by. So does that mean that we're ready to kick into heading 1,000 feet up?
Totally.
Should I fire up the jets?
Fire it up.
There we go. And we're skyward. Look out the window, everybody. We are at 9,000, 9,500, 10,000 feet up. Time to get all weird and abstract and conceptual.
Is that from the lack of oxygen up here? I'm just a side effect, positive side effect.
Getting punchy, 10,000 feet up. So, okay, let's back up and let's talk about this biography thing, because this was one of the things, and we're going to talk about this tool that you passed on to me, and I believe Kate, your wife, passed on to you, this sort of like this reflection worksheet. And a lot of it, I was taking notes in the margins as I was filling it out. And I was like, wow, this is really about like exploring my own personal history and my feelings about it then versus my feelings about it now. And it reminded me of some books I've been reading recently about how the memory works. But I'll let you take it over, Rob. But yeah, this whole idea of a personal biography becoming part of the story we tell ourselves, and then also the story that we discover by really thinking hard about it.
Exactly. So I mentioned kind of the mindset I was in, and all of a sudden sharing some of this with my wife, I think over lunch or something. And she was like, oh yeah, I have this workbook I've been meaning to share with you. And I just was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. And it resonates. And I just got really fired up. And all of a sudden a few hours later wrote the outline for this episode. And it came from, Susanna Conway, who does workshops for journaling and photography, primarily for women, I believe, or exclusively, at SusannaConway.com. And Kate took one of her workshops last year, I think, or early this year. Anyway, and just one of the things that Susanna posted recently, sent out to the people on her mailing list, was this pretty darn cool workbook.
Unraveling the Year Ahead 2013. Yeah. Printed mine out. 25 pages.
So that was like the, oh gosh.
The catalyst.
Yeah, that's the catalyst. And what a tangible example. So if you're curious, I'd recommend check it out while we're chatting here too. It's essentially a workbook, and it's a way to do that sort of reflective looking back and doing some looking ahead, but then finding other angles to look at what honestly, it's a way to find hang-ups and blind spots is how I look at it. Because a lot of times when I get to this planning mindset and I get pretty deep into it, I can sense there's a thing that's almost like a thing in the negative space between like the projects that I'm listing and some stuff that I'm pleased about that happened within the year and stuff that I would like to have done more or whatever. And all of a sudden it's, I feel like I'm starting to paint the shape of some theme that I need to figure that out. And so I know, like, a lot of my current patterns of thinking, I'm probably not going to just go along as normal and then have that magically become clear to me. So,
just take lots of showers, go for lots of walks, and it'll just occur to you, right?
Or beaches. Yeah, I know beaches and sunsets help a lot.
I mean, it can, but that's kind of like letting alchemy do the work instead of, you know, letting our, going back to our Western idea of sussing it out intellectually, right?
Yeah, well, okay. I totally was joking along, but I would argue for exploring a holistic approach. So one of the things that has become really forefront for my vocabulary in design has been this book, 100 Things Every Designer Should Know by Susan Weinschenk. And she really drives home thematically sort of a holistic view of how people work. And, you know, she's a neuropsychologist, and usability expert that she often characterizes her observations in three ways where they're appealing to sort of our survival brain. And I think she calls it the old brain. And then there's sort of the emotional brain, and which I think she calls the midbrain, and then the rational, which is, I think she calls the, I don't know, big brain. I don't remember, but anyway. But what you're saying, like, resonates with that, in my opinion, because, you know, a walk on the beach, other parts of you are doing work as well, chewing on these different goals and the feelings surrounding them and the hangups as far as what you gravitated toward or avoided because you're afraid of it or whatever. It's, you know, that you can totally have eureka moments.
Sure.
While you're not trying to, you know, logically force your way through a topic. So I probably should take more of those.
Well, that's one of my first observations about this whole planning thing, that, like, so I, when you sent me the link, I downloaded the workbook and I started working my way through it, and I was trying to fit it in between other tasks. My first observation is, don't do that. Give yourself room to breathe when trying to really do a good assessment of a good reflection of your year in review. But is that might be on the ground kind of stuff. My first observation was, it was difficult to get into the mental state to really be able to accurately reflect on the questions that were being lobbed at me. It was a struggle.
Well, okay. Stepping back to one of the 1,000 feet up things I was curious about is, well, I know a lot of artists who get along just fine without going about this sort of really intentional reflection and forward-thinking planning. So in a way, and then especially when I have a conversation with an artist of that inclination, I always feel like an alien sometimes, where I'm like, well, how do I explain what even gives me the right to do this? Because, like I'll mention, like, I'm not a, you know, neuropsychologist. I'm not, you know, a psychologist of any flavor, nor a philosopher, nor whatever. What gives me a right to even do this? So.
Yeah, what gives you the right, Rob? Who are you? Who do you think you are?
I'm someone who steals people's good ideas. And so it comes down to it where, yeah, there's a reason why Susan Weinschenk wrote a book. And there's a reason why, Susanna Conway wrote this workbook, and why David Allen wrote his book, and why, you know, all these, because these skills aren't reserved for some select few magical, important people. So I need them too.
So you're starting off with building our biography here is what gives us the right to do what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, art isn't only for artists, and comics aren't only for cartoonists. Is that where you're going?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Design isn't only for designers. Planning and management isn't only for bosses.
Because these disciplines cross over into a whole bunch of different areas.
Yeah. And I've noticed that it has a positive effect. I mean, that's why it's, essentially for both my wife and I, we work it into this, this holiday season because of how much it's meant to both of us. And that is from going through the transition from being pretty unfamiliar with it and then living with the idea of like, well, how do I get more out of, certain things happen this year, certain things I want to have happen again, other things I totally don't want to ever have happen again. And how do I deal with and learn from that?
Then I've got a simple answer for you, and I'm going to pitch this at you and see what you say. To-do lists, done. Look at, I'm dusting my hands. I've got a to-do list. I've got NASB loaded up. I'll just make some task planning going on. I've got my 37 Signals Basecamp loaded up. Bingo. Here's the things to do next year, Jers. Suck it up and do it. Work hard, right? I don't need to think about all that crap.
You know what? Maybe. But we're also creatures of habit. And I guess if you stopped and looked at the overall pattern of your list, are you, how do you feel about the list? Is it moving and changing in a way that you've, that seems great? No problem. Take the time to make that, some other observations on the list as a pattern and how the list has been changing. If you feel so inclined.
Well, this is back to the holistic thing again, you're talking about. It's like, what can we deduce or infer from the list that we make too?
Exactly. There is very likely some useful observations to glean from that. And the other thing is a list as a tool is great at certain needs and certain challenges. I mean, a list addresses some of the tactics and the day-to-day management. Well, but what about the bigger granularity? Like how do you get that wider perspective? It's actually in our takeaways and whatnot too. I think we do want to connect these two worlds because they can seem honest. Well, here's one thing. Sometimes planning can be super fun and invigorating and feel like, oh my gosh, I just saw a vision of what my life was going to be like in like 5 years. And then that was like going on vacation. And then you go back to your real life, which is your to-do list or whatever. And more and more over time, vacation is just a memory.
Right. Well, and as we'll get into when we get to On the Ground, again, I keep coming back to this thing that I discovered some pretty surprising things about myself just in the act of doing what you described in the notes as role-playing, interviewing myself. A drum I've beaten on the show a bunch of times is this idea of perfect honesty, being really honest with what you want and who you are. And I'm reminded once again of the never-ending story, the magic mirror gate, where the guy warns that kind men find out that they're cruel. Brave men discover they're really cowards. Confronted with their true selves, most men run away screaming. When you confront the magic mirror gate, you get exposed to your true self, and a lot of people aren't ready for that. And as I was, listing some of my answers and interviewing myself, I was like, wow, do I really feel that way? So it surprised me that my true attitude wasn't part of the story that I was telling myself. There's a difference between the story we tell ourselves and what we can learn by looking, by asking ourselves some leading questions. So there's the value there. And then that led to, and gosh, this sounds like therapy. This sounds like therapy, Rob. I don't know if this is getting squishy, but it was interesting that it started helping me connect the dots to some things that have been going wrong for me in past years. So is it time to hit the ground? I mean, did I miss anything in this?
No, I think you totally got the, what we're trying to do to tie these different kinds of planning together is...
Whoops, sorry, I hit a button. I was getting the soundboard up to be able to do the transition.
It came out of my mind. I thought that came from my mind, honestly, because I'm sharp and ready, you know. It made sense.
I'm just going to punctuate all of your great points with that from now on.
Sorry. You know what? If you do, I owe you. So, okay. How do you tie the big thinking planning and the day-to-day tactics and whatnot? And I do think that maybe we're onto something with this biography, metaphor, becoming our own journalist, where we're both the interviewer and we're the interviewee. So how much is it like therapy? I guess it depends on how much you hire someone else to do some of the work. that'd be one measure. If you suddenly envision yourself in a swamp with a lightsaber and you cut off the dark figure's mask and it's you, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know. I mean, this is always a dicey area, this whole self-discovery thing, but this is part of the package. This is part of the deal when you are pursuing a creative pursuit, is if you really want to be honest with what you want, part of the puzzle is figuring out who the heck is up here, right? And part of understanding that is understanding the difference between the story that we tell ourselves and the story that is going on that we may not be aware of, and that's not to devaluate either of them. And another thing, that here's another observation I can use as a bridge as we talk about being a journalist, is as I was interviewing myself, I was discovering things that I'm not prepared to share on the show. I mean, I've got things written down here that I'm like, wow, that felt good to get that on paper, but I'm not saying it on the air.
Totally. You know, like
it gets,
I would,
personal is what I'm saying.
No matter what, like even like the goal planning aspect of it gets really personal with, yeah. I mean, like, I have digital pictures I will totally not share that are of these giant post-it notes that come from this, you know, yearly ritual that I do with my wife, where we, I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're, I even get nervous sometimes when like strangers come over to our house, because like if you open a certain door, there's this giant post-it note with like all sorts of really personal things on it that are, yeah. Anyway. I hear you. So we're doing our best to walk the line as far as, you know, sharing our experience and being real, but you know, we're not in the Breakfast Club when we're not going to dump our whole purse out for you.
And with that, let's talk about this journalistic method. And in order to do that, we've got to, well, I'm going to choose a more dramatic transition, because it is going to get messy and personal, and we may discover something really scary about ourselves. On the ground. We're out of the clouds. Time to actually talk about like useful applications of this journalism stuff, of this self-interview.
Seriously, I think it's a wonderfully freeing thing with, so if you ever done role playing, one of the really helpful things to figure out is not just the sex and race and height and weight of your character and all that stuff, but, you know, motivations, yes, but like what's their job? And literally thinking of a job can really clarify, like, what the heck should I do next? Because what if it were your job? And, you know, you start figuring out, like, well, what do journalists do? So somehow I've got to get ready to understand a topic to go interview someone to gain a story. And I think that's could be a pretty helpful framework for helping mine your own experience to come up with you know, both the reflection part and the looking forward. So.
Yeah. So which ones did you want to talk about first? Like these, because you got something in here, like, here, let me preface this. It didn't take me long to get under the hood of this whole self-interview process, because I've done so many shows with other creators and I've learned how to say, okay, what's the nut to this person? Like, what's the one thing they do that other people don't do? And how can I arrange a fleet of questions to get to that nut? So as soon as I realized what I was doing on paper, as I was writing stuff, I was like, oh, I'm interviewing myself here. And when I went back to my previous answers and said, that's no good, jurors. You are faking it there. You're just giving me a three word sentence for the answer to this, and that's not the whole story. And I took on that, you know, that role pretty readily. And that's why I scared myself a little bit. Not because of like a whole two-faced thing, but because I was discovering things about my motivation behind certain things that really surprised me. But let's say you don't have any experience doing that, because I'm looking at some of these questions just in this workbook, and I'm thinking, yeah, I could see somebody giving a one-word answer to that and in it not being very enlightening.
Well, I mean, literally in the Susanna Conway example workbook, which I think is, you know, if you're curious about this and you've made it this far into the episode, by all means, go download it and whatnot and check out the other stuff she does. If you're a guy, you can go download it. If you're female, you can actually go take her workshops and whatnot. She just specializes anyway.
But you have a bunch of different ones listed on here for people who don't know how to interview themselves. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So the Susanna Conway, that's a free downloadable example. We'll have a link to in the show notes. And yeah, it's just at SusannaConway.com. I see, I don't know if Jersey posted that in the chat, but someone did. That's cool. So there's others that have played in this space before. I mean, it's well-trodden ground. I mean, you have a lot of people who have made their trade when it comes to a little bit of self-help, a little bit of empowering other people, a little bit of, you know, you really got to tread carefully when you enter this bookstore section, right? Yeah. But there are some useful ones out there. Classic for a lot of people who are into technology at all. You probably have heard of or run into David Allen's Getting Things Done. There's coincidentally on a podcast that if we did have a drinking game that gets mentioned a lot on this show and others that I do for sure is Back to Work podcast at the 5x5 Network. Merlin Mann and Dan Benjamin are going through Getting Things Done right now. As far as they're essentially doing like a two, three episode arc. And essentially that is it's tough to really summarize that method, where it is holistic and it very much is I would say, David Allen wants to help you become a machine of productivity and starting from the ground up, getting all the things out of your head and then, you know, rebuilding from there for the stuff that matters to you and whatnot. And he's got some really good methods in there. Great place to start. And I even think that, there are versions of his book that have sort of workbooky aspects to it, if I'm not mistaken. And you, Jersey, you mentioned a really, really useful one in the show notes.
Yeah, this one I thought was particularly interesting to the naysayers of New Year's resolutions. And this is David Say, who has gotten a lot of mention on this show before in the past as well. He's the guy who created the Emergent Task Planner, which has been... very instructive in learning about what I can and cannot handle in a day by just having me. We've talked about this before. Like he developed this way of tracking your time. And if you stick to it for a reasonable amount of time and you start your day by setting your goals. Here are the 3 to 4 things I'm going to get done today. And you track your time and you do this long enough and you see what gets done and what doesn't get done. And suddenly I had a whole new perspective on what I could actually accomplish. So this guy thinks a lot about productivity. And I think in a useful and meaningful way. And he has a post, which we'll link to in the show notes, called Groundhog Day Resolutions. And he makes the case, and I think there's some strength to this argument, that this particular time of year is the worst time to be doing reflection and planning for the future because you're so wound up in all sorts of other stresses. What am I going to get so-and-so for Christmas? Oh, I got the office holiday party. Oh, my brother wants me to come over for his party. And then, oh, I got to go visit mom and dad. And then I got to go visit my wife's mom and dad. You're so wound up with so much other stress that this is a really poor time for reflection. So he suggests that you wait until January 1st. That's your time of reflection. February 2nd, Groundhog's Day. And he also acknowledges that Groundhog's Day is a funny holiday that's easy to remember. But it also works out into this plan. He's got this really interesting plan where Groundhog's Day is where you set your goals for the year. And then you have a check-in on March 3rd, April 4th, May 5th. And so it's, you know, 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, 4-4, 5-5, and so on. And those are the periodic check-in times. And if you go ahead and read the whole article, he even has some gameful intent design. Is that the proper terminology?
He's designed it with gameful intent. And folks call it gamification. I do think fighting back against the Homer Simpson style word, shifting it into something a little more precise and helpful. Because that's very saxophone, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. No, and it's funny. I was just listening to the Spark podcast where they had somebody who is an expert in gameful intended design, and she said exactly the same thing. You know, she's like, let's use some terminology that actually means something instead of just like throwing a bunch of Homer Simpson language on the end of an existing word. He gives himself, he has like different like point tiers, like different ways to award himself points for, going back to this. This is like he said, like, there's no point to doing this planning your year if you don't have any kind of measurement, and a way to measure is to use some gameful design to award yourself for successful products made. And how do you measure whether or not it's successful? Well, there's a couple different categories that he develops in order to measure that. And so like there's like an inspiration is one of them, empowerment is one of them. And that's what his check-in points are for. It's not just a catalog of to-do lists checked off. It's also, did I accomplish the goal, right? And this goes back to pedagogy, right? Every lesson plan I design is supposed to have an outcome, right? It's supposed to be a procedure and an outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Something you can measure.
It's exactly. I mean, and it's combining. This is a really good example of something that combines like the really strategic thinking with the very tactical thinking to make a little feedback loop to make sure it's real and accountable. And there's a principle I've come across in software development, which is or is it an axiom? It's something like no. It's I suppose it's a principle or a heuristic. Measure what you manage and manage what you measure. So don't list anything if you don't have a way to measure it, right? So if you put a goal down and there's no way to observe if it happened, it probably needs to be refined, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I dig this approach too. And he has it tying into partially a feedback loop of his earnings. And he's got it, his metaphor for his game is role-playing levels. So that's pretty cool. And so like if he's making 750 off of his given resource that or product or whatnot, then he's at level 9. But he doesn't say what he is a level 9 of.
Yeah. I need to get him on either Comics Are Great or we need to get him on the Lead Into Art show to discuss these products he makes in greater detail. Because this guy, he makes really, really good stuff and thinks really hard about this stuff. But
absolutely. And I'm completely, that look on my face, for those who can see the camera, is I am completely shocked that we haven't said that before. So, yes, I agree. You know, like, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at us get all reflective.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, especially if we did it like in January where everybody's thinking about this stuff.
Right? Oh, wow.
But anyway, that's inside baseball. Okay, was there any others that you had in here for different existing interview patterns?
Oh, existing interviews. If you want to get a little bit morbid, there's the old Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey, where essentially you write your own eulogy, right? You know, you're really looking, you know, everyone's hopeful of living a good long life and then, you know.
But not too long.
Well, you know, long enough. I mean, you don't have to go all cyborg and stuff. I mean, I suppose if maybe, maybe you have the urge to write your eulogy purely in binary because you know you're going to be thinking digital by then. I don't know. That'd get weird. But
this Futurama joke sounds like 00100.
Exactly. All right,
but yeah, so Stephen R. Covey, write your eulogy.
I know that's often. I think it's sometimes termed like Silver Age. I mean, it's pretty dated, but there's a lot of useful stuff in there. Like even a lot of the concepts we're talking about. You know, it's a good book, worth checking out. And one of his key I suppose it's a bit like scenario planning of like essentially in that situation, what would you like everyone to say about you? Like what you got done, what you did, and what your life meant.
And what effect the things that you made had on people.
Exactly. But then I really do think on a more lighter note and a more palatable, just look back 1 year, look forward 1 year. The Susanna Conway's workbook is pretty fantastic. And
very interesting. It's very, yeah. very interesting, but we'll get to that in takeaways, I think.
Yeah. And so if you're looking, these are all examples again to you, if you want one of the things that you do, like if you're learning an instrument, you practice other people's songs. You don't typically start writing your own song right away. So there you go. There's existing sheet music to explore when it comes to this topic. I think it's completely valid if you want to go punk rock and make up your own interview as well. Even if you're not accustomed to doing this, it still will likely yield some really, really interesting insights in both the looking forward and looking back, where you're just being your own reporter. So you could pick some basis for the interview, like, hey, what has inspired me? What has inspired me at different points throughout the year, and start exploring the classic, you know, who, what, when, where, and why kinds of things.
Well, yeah, I was going to throw in there is that going back to pedagogy again, one of the things that I learned very early on in classroom discussion is ask how and why questions, not if the, either or questions, right? Is it this or this? Right. But I would say, how does this feel different when I change this? And when they say, well, it feels this way. Why? Right. And then I defend their position. And I find that that's a really effective trick to start digging at an idea. How and why?
It's super powerful. And so just based on that, you'll end up generating your own interesting interview. And again, like what we're talking about in this first section is planning your interview. It's not necessarily answering the questions yet, because in a way, things could get kind of a little extra messy. So maybe you would want to conduct your interview in phases, but I'm thinking I would try to draft the interview first before answering it.
How come?
And what's that?
How come?
I would see it as... having an overall cohesion that would, you know, that could totally morph, but I don't even have an awesome way to back that up other than saying I see it being like a more manageable.
Is it putting your brain into two different mindsets?
Exactly. I think you'll be exactly when you're handling the task of generating the interview, you are, yeah, you're focused on certain concerns. And then when you are answering those questions, those concerns aren't in the forefront anymore. And that way you get to be more focused. So that's one argument for it.
Mm-hmm. But then messiness can also yield some pretty interesting things. I mean, this is a commonly used tool amongst writers, but I'd never seen it before personally until a friend of mine, I was watching her write, and she would write and write, type, and if she had another thought mid-sentence, two hard returns, start the new thought. Even if she was only halfway through the previous thought, just blast the paper with ideas. And I said, but you didn't finish your previous thought. She's like, well, if it's a really good thought, I'll come back to it. But I had another thought, and I just kept going. So her brainstorming sheets, you know, like Word documents, were just this smattering of half paragraphs, three paragraphs, a quarter of a sentence, right? And her rationale is that this is about idea generation. This isn't about constructing anything. I'm going to go back through this, and I'm going to turn this into constructed ideas after the fact.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot of just the idea of, yeah, writing practice, what's her name? It's totally escaping me, but it's one of my favorite writing tip books, but it's escaping me. And
it'll come back to you, and we can put it in the show notes. It's actually going to come back to you in the next 10 minutes, I bet.
Yep. Natalie Goldberg writing down the bones.
There we go.
All right. That's really cool. And yeah, that's a great example of, when you're in one mode, you can be probably more productive, but not everyone works the same way. So of course it's not black and white, but, there you go. It was clearly obvious with all advice. It's filtered by the advisor's values and perspective. So there you go.
That's right. Biases. We have our biases.
Yes, I do. So let's see. All right. So interviewing yourself. All right. Obviously, so you have a set of questions, or you're ebbing and flowing back and forth between making questions and answering them and whatnot. At some point, you're going to be capturing results. How did your raw interview go so far, at least?
Capturing results. Yeah. The interesting thing, I mean, this goes back to this idea of make sure that you have time to decompress before doing this. Get yourself into a place where you can be thoughtful. Because when I look at the beginning of my interview, it's all very terse responses. And most of them related, most of my answers are related to productivity, because that's where my brain was, because I was in between to-do tasks that day. And I was feeling the stress of, well, crap, I got to get this thing done before the Lean Into Art cast tonight. And I got laundry going. And I got to get dinner on the table. And I didn't finish that freelance thing that I had to do. And, that's all that was at the forefront of my mind. And this interview is asking me about, what did you embrace in 2012? What did you embrace in 2012? And I'm like, opportunities to do this and that and seeking partnerships and such. And wait, let's back up. Let's ask ourselves what this question means. So later on, the answers got to be more thoughtful. So that'd be another thing that I'd throw in there is give yourself time to decompress and get into that flow of the interview. And I don't know if we want to save this for takeaways or not. It's just that what I was discovering is that the story that I was beginning to write was a very defensive story. Mm. I was saying, well, I know I got that one wrong. Not the answer to the question, but it was, as I was highlighting different things that happened throughout the year, my attitude was, I handled that badly. This could have gone better. And I wrote in the margins of this interview is that a lot of these questions are really trying to point you at the positives, like focusing on forgiveness and letting go as a component of growth. That's one of the that was one of the notes that I put on one of the questions. Good reminder to focus on who keeps you healthy, right? There's even like a whole section on forgiveness, who are the people that you need to forgive, and not even that you should. There's no shoulds in this that I think is so great. He says, who do you need to forgive, and do you need to forgive yourself? And then focusing on things like, what are you proud of, things like that. And as I was answering these questions, and I'm noticing that a lot of my attitude in this was very negative. And again, it might have been because that's where my mind was, because I was stressed out. But that was by capturing that on paper and looking at it again, I put down another note. Let me see if I can find it. Handle stressful situations with calm attentiveness. That was one of the notes I wrote to myself. Is that I looked back at this and said, dude, you're freaking out here. You're freaking out trying to just get something done. Let's be calm and attentive to it while you're doing it rather than. So there's the first takeaway right there. By doing the interview, I was alerted to something that I handle stress poorly sometimes. Because I'm just trying to do the J. Jonah Jameson, come on, I got to get this out the door. Parker, get in here. You need 6 photos on my desk stat. Miss Brandt, get over here. And that's glamorized, right? And so when you're in that mode, you feel like I'm doing it. I'm getting stuff done, man. But there's also, take a drink, Mr. Miyagi way of handling it, where it's like, let's just be calm and attentive to this thing, and then we can focus on it, and I can give better answers right away rather than fussing over it. Does that say anything?
Oh, yeah. I think so. Exactly. So we have our kind of first two bullet points in our interviewing yourself exploration here, capturing the results and then studying the results. Right. I think they can happen simultaneously, but I do think inherently giving yourself a chance to build up something to observe. And so that's partially a little bit of a heuristic coming from my UX experience, where you want, as soon as, for instance, like doing a usability study or doing secondary research, trying to gather observations from experts on a given topic. And all of a sudden, what is the, let's see, what's a common strong approach to calls to action on web pages, right? On especially if they're public facing and not your customer yet or something, right? On mobile devices, right? Just like getting really specific, doing a bunch of research and then finding something awesome and getting really excited can be super distracting, because maybe that would look a little different adding more things to the list or piling, make the pile get bigger and then observe it to see what's in the data and is there resonance among some of the things that you're collecting. And that's a thing from habit, from years of doing goal planning and finding this invisible thing sometimes in between the goals, the themes that are in my blind spot, that kind of thing.
And
also the UX where I'm like, that's where just advising and having a bias, like, yep, I totally own that bias, where it can be super useful to get lit, to let the pile get a little bigger. And before you start, you know, totally coming up with your conclusions, right? Yeah. It can be so tempting, especially when some answers are so exciting or satisfying or intriguing or distracting. Well, but you know,
well, in my case, I was this was partially because of the show, but I also just do this because I'm an insufferable pseudo intellectual. Is as I was reading going through the interview, I was trying to simultaneously keep a meta eye on what was happening. Why is this question being asked of me? What is the purpose of this question? Not like what's the subtext, but what's the agenda? What's the purpose of the question, right? What's the methodology at work here so that I can come back to the show and report on, yes, I noticed that she used this certain methodology when she was asking me this question. which was, and I was simultaneously trying to answer the questions honestly. But that distracted me from answering the questions honestly. So after two pages, you stop seeing notes in the margins about the methodology itself, and I just start answering the questions. And when I started answering the questions, and I got about almost three quarters of the way through this thing, I'm in the 2013 section where she's like, okay, let's start using words to plan our next year. It starts getting really honest. And then when I stopped and looked at it before we did the show, I was like, wow, this is really negative. There's a lot of negative stuff in here that I didn't think I had inside me. So,
One thing that I noticed, cause I actually haven't embarked on this. I started answering some, when I was paging through the workbook, reading it. Cause I was evaluating it at first because I get suspicious with this kind of thing, because there's a lot of people who take a very prescriptive, I have huge respect for Susanna's work with this, because I don't feel like she's injecting any kind of heavy-handed agenda. Does she have a bias? Does she have? Yeah, she's trying to get people to see a positive thing about it, but it's not heavy-handed and it's not judgmental. And so I really respect. And so that's what I observed, and I was excited to go back through and do the answering. But Here was a meta thing for me this last weekend. Yes, I have time set aside. So this weekend, every once in a while, I negotiate through my very supportive wife that I super appreciate. I know she's watching. Hi, sweetie. we basically negotiate what we call a mini marathon, where essentially I have a good chunk of the weekend to focus on my creative projects. It doesn't happen every weekend, but when it happens, I pressure myself to make some hay. I need to build up accomplishment during these windows of time, because I basically have a free pass to be a less attentive husband and father, essentially. Right. And so here I am on the weekend just going, navel gazing, planning, and not getting, like, normally I go through a checklist and I feel that feedback loop of like, oh yeah, I'm a machine. Watch me go. You know, I bet I'd even make Ryan Estrada proud, you know, that kind of thing. And,
He's standing behind the Ewoks with a sparkly glow around him, and he's going.
Exactly. And, you know, so this is one of those times where I'm feeling the absence of that. So, I hunger for these planning times of the year where I get outside of that pattern because I don't want to be a slave to it, you know? And anyway, I feel you. I've got a J. Jonah Jameson inside me too. So essentially, and even when J. Jonah has the weekend off, I still remember him, you know? So
yeah, that's a hard thing to shake, that whole, like, you know, I'll just work harder and I'll just try to fit more in. That's all.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a glamour that still gets associated with that. And this was the part of my real biography versus my you know, self-constructed biography that really surprised me was alerting me to the fact that I spent a lot of time in an environment where anger meant you cared. And if you don't express your stress in anger, then you don't really give a darn about what's going on. And it made me realize that without my even being aware of it, you know, it's like, and I'm not talking about like, oh, I had a bad childhood or any of that crap. I'm just saying that I've known a lot of people who subscribe to that ethos. It's a widely permeated ethos, right? And I didn't know it was in me. I didn't know that ick got inside of me too. And so I was surprised to see that on the paper as well. But anyway. So that's where this can be revelatory to you, is that I wound up after the fact, after collecting my data and reflecting on some of this data, I started writing myself some really specific notes. And I wrote down the line, anger does not equal passion, right? Passion's a different thing than anger. Anger is a reaction to passion, but it's not passion itself. And you know, I've known lots of people in my life who always say, they throw a tantrum about something. Well, I'm just passionate. Well, I'm passionate too, and I don't you know, lay on my back and scream when I don't get what I want. But anyway, so this is, you know, some of that reflecting on the data once it's on the paper that I think is really interesting. And this is so similar to how I write stories too. It's so funny. I've talked about this before, like in the Comics Fundamentals course, which is part of the Lean Into Art season of creative challenges, which we'll talk about a little bit later. That's a sale, by the way, $10. I remember talking about how I suss out a story by having an interview with myself, where I'm the interviewer, I'm the investigative reporter, and I'm interviewing me, the writer, saying, "Well, so you got a bad guy, huh? Why does he want to do what he want to do? What's his agenda? What's his mission? What's his purpose? What's his purpose in the story? What's his purpose in the plot?" And I have to defend myself against this interviewer, right? It's the same thing that we do when we're telling stories.
It totally is. And that's where I think it's really important to not just come up with the questions and then be sure to capture answers, because I don't feel like when I read through that workbook, I was letting myself spend time here and there to answer a question, but I was just doing it in my head. I don't count that as actually doing the exercise. Like, I need to actually get the ideas out so then I can look back at them and observe them and then see them all gathered in whatever, you know, form they look like to me, a pile or stacks or I don't know. And then that gathering totally tells a story. It tells its own story. And that's where I think a good journalist will you know, like, so journalists can get a bad rap for, some of them don't have that as a method, where they come into it with assumptions and they're just looking to back up their assumptions. Give me a quote that matches what I think already. I think a great journalist is actually discovering as they go, and they are not afraid to follow the discovery and become something different than what they started. And that's okay. And so that's somewhat similar to my opinion regarding doing user experience as well, because you end up finding out things, you have new insights. What are you going to do? Throw them away?
Again, it comes back to writing as well, is that the most delightful thing in the world is when the story surprises you.
Yeah.
you know, when people have this romantic notion of the thing just springing forth fully formed, and it's the genius of the writer, they just sit down and it just comes out of them. Boy, that sounds like a boring existence to me, because my favorite parts are when I'm really stuck and then all of a sudden, ding, 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 ding. And I mean, and I've been in a room with another writer where we both hit that moment and we literally yelled ding, 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 ding at each other, because that's how good it feels when you land, when you get it, you know, when it surprises you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's an element of sort of letting yourself be changed by the thing that you're trying to make, letting yourself be changed by the investigation that you're trying to do, rather than confirming, right? It's like, I'm gonna take this self-interview and it's going to confirm that I'm this happy, cheerful guy who never gets angry and makes lots and lots of stuff that makes lots of people happy.
It's like a press release for your ego.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Rob Stenziger Corporation brings value to all of its clients and it's, you know, makes the world a fancier, nicer place. Da 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 da. And right, with our new release in 2012, we whatever. And anyway.
With the release of the 2013 edition of Rob Stenziger Incorporated.
Exactly.
Right. So okay. So, study the results and what's the story now? And then you've got some other things, ideas here for interviewing yourself.
I think two other things in the writing it up, I think it's good to have it in some format that's handy for you. And that could be different for everybody. I mean, maybe it's, you know what, you're a visual storyteller, chances are listening to this podcast or you're interested in that. You could easily consider making a comic out of it. That'd be, and it might take a long time as far as the, if you have that kind of time to put in the planning process, or you could just make some cool doodles or like a nice scrapboard sheet of, like I was reading a book on global user experience actually, and like in the chapter page was always like some doodles that represent all the ideas, and you know, or maybe it's mind maps or scrapbooks, whatever. To be able to put it in a format that helps remind you that it exists and keeps you in touch with what you felt was important from it.
Mm-hmm. Pinterest. How about that? Yeah. Like you can have private Pinterest boards now. Right?
Oh yeah, you can totally have secret Pinterest boards.
Because you dig the Pinterest, right? I see you on there a lot.
I do, yeah. I like it.
Good, I want to do an episode on it because I still don't get it. And I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy who's like, I don't get women and their toilet seat issues. You know what I mean? I don't want to be that guy. But I do look at it and I'm like, it's neat, but what am I supposed to do with it? Can I share this? Can I share that? I don't know what the local customs are, as it were. So anyway, well, that's table that. Cool. Another time.
Totally.
We have too much stuff to get through today.
Sounds fun. And so exactly. They kind of work together as far as capturing it and keeping it handy. You know, write it up to set yourself up to then keep it around. So what do you use to manage your tasks already? You don't have to go around and you don't have to replace it and do it all, right? Like this thing, this exercise can just be a great resource that plugs in somehow to your already existing task management approach. So I actually captured a couple notes that were, I wrote gentle reminders and rewards. I rebel against myself with this too. Like I enjoy gameful intent and I almost do, I play out Mr. Roboto against myself, where I'm like, you know, I throw away the mask and, you know, I'm a man, right? I don't need this, you know, I don't need these trinkets in a biscuit for, you know,
one dark chocolate for every to-do item off the list, Rob.
You know what? I feel good and that's enough. But then again, other times I'm like, you know what? I do need the goodie. I need a cookie once in a while. And so anyway, whatever. Yeah. So I look at it as gentle reminders and rewards, because the other thing is I also, the J. Jonah comes out once in a while and I'm like cursing at myself for not getting something done. And it's just like, that's just not useful really. It takes too big of a toll. It's too,
if you fail on your resolution, then you failed as a human, right?
Exactly. And that's how I'm actually a ghost, by the way. Sorry to ruin the surprise.
Oh my God, we're in one of those movies. One of those, oh, I forget the name of that guy. Shyamalan?
Exactly. So. Anyway. Integrate the Shyamalan into the, integrate the big planning into the small planning, essentially, is what that idea was. You have any thoughts on that before we
I think for me personally, there's lots and lots of places where I keep this kind of stuff, and it depends on the level of intimacy that the ideas have with myself, right? Yeah, so I have books that are just collections of really, really great quotes, whether it's like not necessarily like inspirational quotes, but quotes that I think are that communicate an idea really effectively or touch on a philosophy that I think are really neat. I don't care if anybody finds that. It's just going to be, well, look at this. He took some quotes from Transformers and put them in a book. And then I've got my notes of here's where I'm journaling story ideas. And that's just in like random notebooks, or it might be, and I keep a couple Evernote notes for capturing that when I don't have access to a pencil and paper. And then I've got like self-interview stuff for storytelling. As I'm trying to figure out, like, so the question I'm trying to answer in 2013 is what is the story I would tell my 8-year-old self? If I had a little 8-year-old me next to me and I said, here, get ready, kid, because this stuff's coming. What story would I construct? What ideas would I communicate to him? And that's where I'm dumping a lot of personal stuff that I don't want people to see. That goes in a very private, password-protected note on one of my machines, right? So there's different deliveries and formats for different kinds of self-interview stuff, right? And it should be something handy. It should be something that's not, you know, it's like, well, I'm not going to go home. I got to light this candle. I got to turn this crank. I got to shut the windows. I got to do this in order to be able to capture this, because then you lost it. It's gone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's got to be accessible. So,
Rob, you're talking about, I got to look at 12 months now. I got to look at a whole year. What am I, Superman? And I know there's a big head, but there ain't that much brain matter in there. I can't look at a whole year at once. What are you talking about?
Well, so as far as looking back and thinking about, what happened? Or are you thinking about the looking forward? Like, oh, you did all this writing and now you have to face it all. And now it's like, oh my gosh, now what? It's, you know, so yeah, I have my task planner, but I've got this, you know, I wrote a novel interviewing myself. I think I'll just go have some pizza and, you know, move on. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's, I would say chances are if you're dealing with like a daunting work product saying, you know, holy moly, where do I even begin? This is exciting and I'm inspired, except when I actually look at it and want to take a step forward. I would say, is there a slice that you could start with? You know, or is there like the initial already, you know, available thread you can pull on to start, you know, like a natural fit for January kind of thing?
Well, I wrote on here, Rob, get better at comics. So I'm wondering how I can turn that into a small slice.
A small slice. Chances are you might want to go back and do an interview number two.
Make more good comics. Well, I'm busted. I can't do it. Not gonna happen next year, right? But yeah, you're right. You do have to get a little bit more granular to make it. And if anybody thinks that we're talking nonsense here, this is completely applicable to this whole thing about compartmentalizing your procedure and making comics. Why do I go through two rounds of thumbnails, then a round of pencils, then a round of inks, then a round of colors? Because I have different concerns at each stage of the game, and I'm getting to have a laser beam focus on each stage of the game. When I'm thumbnailing, I'm only thinking about panel construction, visual rhythms, composition, story flow, and story moments, beats, rhythms, etc. When I get to penciling, I'm just worried about drawing it right because I've already fought those other battles. When you take a slice of this story that you wrote and say, this is the thing I'm taking on, focus on that, you'll get to the other ones. We did another episode called Chipping Away at Things, I think is what the title was. Something like that. It was like,
oh, yeah. It was like an iteration kind of episode, right?
Yeah.
What would be, that's a great idea. Like, so of the things, so you're really excited if this is one big machine you've now expressed. It's in interview form. It's out of your head. And you're like, wow, that looks so awesome. What part do you want to build first? You know, like that, which would be its own reward. You know, that's sometimes what I tackle is what would be the most solvable and satisfying thing on the list, because I end up coming up with a bunch of stuff I want to build. And and the list is too big already, and I need to go back through and I need to do the interview, which will help me filter all this other stuff.
So. Well, and this is again where I can give some props to David Say's Emergent Task Planner, because it taught me so much about what I can manage on a week-to-week basis that it's making it a lot easier to look at the next 12 months and really get a sense of, okay, well, that's got to go. And as I'm doing that, ooh, some of those things hurt. Some of those things hurt really bad to let it go. I mean, I'm dropping babies in a volcano when I do that. But you know, it's also having a sense of not realism the way grown-ups talk about it. You know, welcome to the real world, kid. Life is pain. But realism in the sense of, well, I know from experience that I can only get X amount done. Therefore, let's not plan for any more than that kind of thing.
I'm in a similar boat. I keep trying to wrestle with the idea of doing more by doing less or whatever, or be more effective by doing less. And yeah.
Here's what I wrote down. This interesting. Yeah. You should say that, because I found a new way of approaching that idea was, ooh, doing less and having faith that it's going to be enough. Because this whole, well, work smarter, not harder, get more out of less. And, you know, the whole Japanese Zen thing. Well, the frustration that comes out of that is, for me anyway, is that I'm not confident that I'm actually getting more out of less. And then I find myself stumbling and adding more and more to it. Like, just a little bit more. I just need 15 more minutes on this thing. It's not quite right. And I don't call myself a perfectionist. I'm surprised by this. And this is what I discovered through this self-interview. And I realized that I need to do things faster. Well, from experience, from my Emergent Task Planner and from my self-interview, I've discovered that I have a problem with doing things fast. Because why? Why do I have a problem with that? Why do I continuously add on more steps? Why do I continuously noodle? Because I don't have the faith that it's right. So in other words, let's turn this around and say, do it faster and trust that it's going to be right. And if it's not, you get to do another one. Calm down, kid. You know, you get paid for this stuff by people, so you must be doing it pretty okay. So.
Yeah, honestly, like that minute of observation is probably worth the whole price of admission for the podcast. It's, And I don't mean that in a backhanded way, because it's free, actually. I mean, like, it's...
That was a Steve Martin joke, actually. How much was it to get in here? Free. Oh, you're going to get your money's worth tonight.
Exactly. Twice your money back. No, that's... Yeah, that is very powerful. So,
Well, there's a testament to the self-interview and what you can deduce from it, so... Yeah, I underlined that line twice because that was really eye-opening for me.
I look forward to it. Who knows? Like, this is I imagine this is going. This will thematically flavor a few of the podcasts and things I do as I start the new year. Yeah. Likely because, yeah, it's just basically, you know, like someone who just went on a trip that was really wonderful and exotic, and it's just like, yeah, it changed me. I feel really good about whatever. Anyway. I look forward to going on that trip. So, takeaways.
Oh, is it time for takeaways? Then I better hit a thing, right? Because we've got to go. Now we'll get a little bit more cheerful. We got all like dreadful and serious. Now, time to go home, Rob. Take it home. For the takeaway section. And now everybody's awake again because this bright, cheerful Lin-Min May music just kicked in.
Yes, we are living it up here in the cold depths of space and in Macross City aboard the SDF-1. Anyway, making the best of it. Song.
What?
Exactly. We're making the best of it. And we're learning about love through song. There you go. All right. The takeaways, I think, are kind of a natural thing to fit in here. Oftentimes we have takeaways in the podcast because, well, we're doing stuff every week and we're being reflective and noticing things that happen as we work along, like, oh, wow. You know, like a certain tool was a really good idea, or something that worked out particularly well or not. But like, here we are with the planning process. And I think we have probably not enough time to go into all sorts of depth on these different things, but we've got this little project called Lean Into Art. And we're about to enter actually a fresh set of planning sessions for Lean Into Art as well, right. Which is pretty cool. And of course, then we've got, you know, Jersey, we've got Rob. So,
and this is what we call a modeling exercise, where we will now model the thinking that you do through this self-interview. And why do you do a modeling exercise? Because it gives everybody a basis of comparison. Well, that's how they did it. And if I don't know where to start, I can try that and then find my own way into it.
So let's see. We haven't gone through all of the different updated planning for Lean Into Art, but doing a little bit of looking back, I feel like we've received like some more and more feedback as the year has gone on. And that's been really cool, because it feels like we're on the right track for doing something that's of value. Because one of the things that I can, and I'm not going to go super inside baseball or whatever with this, but like just a little bit, where I love the sort of big thinking and mission behind the project. Of course. Right. I mean, of course I do, one of the things I love about it is one of the things that it worries me about myself, which is the, loving to combine a lot of different things. So we're reaching out to like everyone who's visual storytellers. And so a lot of conventional wisdom would tell you like, get more specific and, you know, don't
find
talk about.
Find your niche and serve it.
I totally missed it again. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Like finding your niche, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Finding your niche. And I did an episode of the Polytechnicast around this kind of, where it's like my Jawa detection kit. Which refers to a talk that Merlin Mann and John Gruber put on a few years back at South by Southwest, where, you know, just giving advice to some bloggers and whatnot. But at the same time, that thing that I'm worried about, I notice, well, other people seem to be enjoying that about the podcast. So that's pretty cool that we think a lot about a bunch of different things.
Well, no, you're right. You're right. I mean, that's the kind of thing where I've always worried it's a hard sell. You know, from the start, our earliest conversations about the project were, is like, look, I know this is not a surefire way to make money, because the surefire way to make money, or at least the proven way to make money, is to say, you need me. If you don't have me in your life, you will not succeed as an artist. And I said, I don't want to be that guy. Mm-hmm. I want to be the guy who says, hey, are you a self-directed person who doesn't need me, but likes to think about this stuff a lot and maybe wants to think a little bit more about it, then we should talk. We should sit down and have a conversation, because those are the kind of people I like to be around. But there's not a whole lot of statistics on or track record of proven big businesses that were built on such a concept. So I always felt like the odds were stacked against us from the start. But going back to your original question, were we being good and helpful self-directed learners and facilitators? Yeah, you're right. In recent months, we've had more feedback. That's measurable, right?
Yeah.
So we never set a number, going back to David Say, we never set a number of saying, like, we should have this much feedback. We should have this many emails and this much interaction with us in such and such a way. And perhaps that's something we should look at next year.
Yeah, that's a good point. We need to, we should come up with more measurement. Yeah, within reason, and that'll be an interesting puzzle to take on, because those are, those are challenging things. But we put out. I feel good. Like, so, how do you feel about let's see, we have like we ran a gamut as far as like trying out different kinds of episodes for the podcast. And I really dig and from what we hear from the feedback poll, sounds like people really like the new format.
Actually, it's not just I was looking at that. Let me go to it again because I was really surprised. I think we don't have like a ton of votes on there, but we got some new ones. 10,000 foot view has the most votes right now. 10,000 foot view on the ground, then takeaways.
Yeah. So.
My favorite is the one that the one person who entered their own said extreme overthinking. But anyway, so yeah, we got some feedback in that regard as well. I feel like if we want to go back to personal biography and what I learned about myself through my own interview and how that relates to what I'm making, is that I feel like a good portion of the year, not all of it, but a good portion of the year that I was against the ropes. I was always against the ropes, and I was always defending myself and just putting out fires to keep everything together, right? Mm-hmm. And that defensiveness came through in the interview. It was like, well, but there was this, you know? Yeah, but there was... And I'm like, I hate it when people talk to me like that. Now I'm talking to me like that. And so I feel like there were times where the experimentation was a crutch that I was personally leaning on to bail myself out of the work that I should have been doing on the show. And I feel
I would say that we're well matched in that way because I certainly have been doing that as well, where I would say one of our strengths is we have a natural resource of we are busybodies doing a lot of stuff. And we can mine this experience for the benefit of the show. Yep. And we certainly, instead of, one of this, you ever think of all of a sudden stuff occur to you when you're like washing dishes or something? Like all of a sudden, this was like a recent dishwashing eureka where I went, you know what? The Lean Into Art, it has a lot of, it reminds me of almost like a public television series. And I would bet they would have a whole staff of people doing this stuff. They would have a grant and a staff of people. And while we have made it through, like, I don't feel like I'm about to fall over dead at the end of the year. Right. I mean, but we've made the best out of our natural resource, but at the same time, like looking at other similar projects that we're putting out an episode every week, what would they be, you know, how would they be generating that content? And probably having a bunch of people do it, or at least more than just two. But
true. So you're coming back to this whole idea of being forgiving rather than blaming. And see, even in what I was saying, it sounded like I'm blaming myself. And I don't mean to. It's more of reflecting on, when I look at the stuff I wrote down, I can hear a defensive voice in there. And I think I took steps to correct that towards the end of this year when you and I sussed out this whole format thing. And once the format
It's brilliant. This format helps a lot too, because again, like creative limitations breed some creative, you have the ability to creatively respond to creative limitations.
It helps me suss out what potential topics to address, because can it be mapped onto 10,000 feet up on the ground? And can it be discussed in that way? And if I don't know how to discuss it in that way, well, I know not to think about it right now. Get it out of my head. And this is a David Allen thing. Get it out of your head, because it's just going to distract you and bog you down. So I know to just shunt it aside. I'm not throwing it away. I'm just putting it aside for further thought. Let's look at what I can use right now. And so, yeah, it's made the planning of the show a lot more, I don't want to say easier, but more effective at doing it with that creative limitation. And you put together the notes for this one. I'm wondering if you found a similar thing.
Oh, it was so helpful. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Because it's a built-in narrative. It's like we have sort of we have a standard panel arrangement, if you will, for how we, like if this were a comic, we have essentially, we have a 3 or 4 panel comic, depending on how you want to look at it. And it's super helpful to have those separate buckets. And even like in the outlines, Jersey has it marked with like how much time should be on a given section
And it changes episode to episode. You know, there's ones where I'm like, okay, well, here's the 10,000 foot up section, but this shouldn't take more than 10 minutes for all the stuff that we have to cover with this. This is really more of a lead in to the main body, which will be on the ground, which will be 35 minutes this episode. Obviously we don't adhere to that, but it's there as a guidepost.
We pull it off. I think we should look back. I think we pull it off like at least three times, if not a little more.
Possibly. I'm not going to be a sticky guy about this. It's not, I'm not that uptight about it. It's just, I like it to be there to be something for me to gauge, you know, are we on target? Or are we way off target? Because again, before when it was just like, well, what could we discuss for an hour and change?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a big question. So, it was harder to generate ideas for that. So yeah, so I think that was a success, and it was a success that was born out of the weaknesses that I was facing, speaking only for myself, that is, early on in the year. So I'd count that as a win. Now you've got next in the list, new workshops. Now this is an area where I feel like this is one of the reasons why in 2013 we're going to switch to a biweekly schedule.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think we had some victories earlier in the year with, you brought out, FATAM came out in like
January, I think.
January. Yeah. And that's awesome. I mean, it's this, was it 4 weeks, 3 weeks,
it was three, I think it was.
Yeah. Just a tour de force, a workshop experience to get into the managing sound in your comic, especially with Adobe Illustrator or other vector based tools, because, again, applied really well in Manga Studio as well. So that came out. We had, two more come out from Tyler James.
That's right.
He was kicking butt this year. Huge hats off to Tyler James for choosing to bring his workshops to Lean Into Art. I mean, so he did one for 30 classes in 30 days, which is all about the creating compelling characters. And that's like strategies for essentially working under the gun. You know, you have some challenge, tight deadline, what have you, where you need a lot of new characters. And he had some great strategies, that workshop is actually on sale during our season of creative challenges as well for $10. But then he came out with two more this year too, which actually those aren't in the sale.
Rack My Book.
Yep. And, Absolute Consense.
Absolute Consense. Both the sales kind of focused workshops on how to be an indie publisher, really. Like Rack My Book was how to get your book into stores, methods and strategies and thinking strategies on getting your book into more comic stores. And Absolute Consense was all about how to table at shows, which I'll say this again and again, that workshop is worth every penny because I continue to use it as a resource to this day when I go to conventions, and it saved my when I went to ALA 2010. And I don't mean to turn this into an ad for Tyler's workshop. I'm just saying that I'm pleased with this workshop because when I went to ALA 2012, just the tackle box idea that he talks about, your con box of all the materials you need for your table. Not only was it super, super helpful in helping me set up my table, but I wound up helping out a ton of other artists in Artist Alley who didn't have that con box, you know? So like, anybody got this? Anybody got binder clips? Anybody got tape? Anybody got scissors? And I had everything everybody was asking for. So I got to be Mr. Nice Guy for the weekend. And every time it happened, I looked at the camera and said, thank you, Tyler James. And smiled.
Exactly. So Tyler is bringing to bear his significant business experience and his entrepreneurial experience and his teaching experience as well. I mean, so he's a teacher, he's a game designer, and let's not have this just be a commercial for his workshops. It's a commercial for Tyler. And and he's bringing those workshops here, which is wonderful. We're a venue for that kind of thing. It's I would love it if someone's who is crazy into like, I'll tell you how to draw undersea creatures. And it's going to be all, you know, I'm so crazy about drawing undersea creatures. Here's fish scales and suction cups and octopi and blah, blah, blah. Wonderful, right? But the visual art aspect is only one thing in this overall sort of learning network that we want to share and advocate and help facilitate and all that. Like to bring in the business aspect, I think it's often an area where many of us could use some improvement. And so I'm just, yeah, that felt like a huge,
I mean, yeah. And also not just improvement, but freshening up, right? You go to the dojo, not because you need to learn, but also to work out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? FATAM was 4 hours. 4 hours. How did I talk about sound effects for 4 hours? Holy crap.
How did you talk about sound effects only for 4 hours? What was
I know, I know. It's two sessions. It's two sessions, but amount to 4 hours of me talking about sound design and comics.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. If you ever want to, if
awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Like if you're like, oh, I need to up my game regarding how I imbue the sense of sound within my comic, there you go. That's 4 hours of awesome that is highly worth checking out. So on the area of like where, okay, now I wish we had more of that, because of course, one of the reasons why Jersey and I are doing this is that, well, we're also interested in, you know, instructing and sharing workshops in this space. And I'm a little embarrassed that I'm ending the year not releasing a workshop. Because I worked for like 8 months on one that I ended up using for Kids Read Comics twice, and it was a success, and I feel super cool about that. But I was planning to follow that up with, now I'm, you know, a fresh compile and a tweaking of it for Lean Into Art, and that didn't happen. But it'll happen in 2012. So looking back, looking forward, that's a little bit me, a little bit Lean Into Art. Yeah, I wanted to get that one out there, but I didn't.
There's quite a handful of things that I wanted to ship this year that I didn't ship on. So I guess the difference is when you say you're going to ship on it, right? That makes it, not to pour salt or lemon on your wound, but
yeah.
But that's an interesting takeaway as well, right? Is not to leave everything under your hat, but also know. Well, you couldn't have known some of these things, Rob, because you got that teaching gig later on in the year too.
A fantastic reason why it didn't happen, but you know, I do wish it happened.
Yeah, the teaching gig was a triumph for you. That's something you wanted for a long time, so I wouldn't.
I know. I do. Exactly. That was on my goals, and I feel super fortunate. Where that's one of those things where goals do affect you and who you interact with and how you go about things. Because I feel like I barely did anything for that opportunity to land in my lap. And then when it did, I suited up and interviewed and on all that. And I feel like I landed it, but I feel very fortunate for it So I was, and actually that just wrapped up yesterday. I taught for a 12-week course at MCAD for the Fair School in Minneapolis on web design. And so it was super fun, and I'm super proud of what the kids did. And it, from their feedback, I don't want to bust my arm, you know, whatever. They liked it.
I'm glad.
They liked it.
So glad. So,
yeah. Anyway,
you deserve it. You deserve the pat on the back. So I'm sure it was an awesome class. I've seen your teaching in action.
Well, thank you. And it, boy, that was way more work than I anticipated. So
I'll bet it was probably twice, if not three times as much as I do for my classes.
So. I have no idea, Jersey. I've read your materials. You do a ton.
That wasn't a way to dig.
No, I know.
I'm just saying that you were teaching a very complex topic.
Yeah, and it's right. There's a lot of, we'll have to save that for future reflection, because that's a whole mountain with a mine in it with lots of material to dig out.
Okay, but we've done some like seesawing back and forth between feeling bad about, you know, things that didn't go right and good about things that did go right. But now we got to look forward. And we did a little looking forward, talking about, you know, one of the reasons we're going bi-weekly is because we want to make more products. We want to make more workshops. We want to make more things for people to interact with beyond the podcast. The podcast was originally supposed to be the free loss leader, I guess is what they call it, right? The thing you do for free to promote the big service you're trying to provide. And we didn't make enough of the service to our satisfaction. So we're going to course correct on that and make more workshops, more refinement features to be announced. But this is the line that you wrote that I think is really interesting. define and be stronger advocates for the Lean Into Art thing, movement, community, events, etc. Yeah, I got some ideas I want to pitch at you.
But cool.
Maybe this isn't the place to do it, but I mean, because that would be true inside baseball if we start talking about, like, you know, maybe we should do this, maybe we should do that.
I want to be collaborative and connect with our audience. I also don't want them balancing my checkbook and stuff. So right. We have boundaries.
Right.
You know,
it's the possibly apocryphal story of how the Millennium Falcon was designed. Right, where they had like a scale model.
Oh yeah,
have you heard that? That is,
who knows if that's apocryphal or not. It's a cool story.
It's a cool story either way, and it's great. It's like, it's almost like a fable, right? It's like, so supposedly the people in the studio were encouraged to just take little bits of model, little tchotchkes and things, and just glue it to the shapes to give it that guts outside look that's the Millennium Falcon is famous for. But they were simultaneously building a full scale model on a set, and finally, a note appeared on the Millennium Falcon model that said, please don't add anything more to this. Every 1-inch thing you add to this is a 10-foot thing we have to build, you know. So, you know, you can sit there and go, oh, and you should have to do a little bit of this, and you should do a little bit of that. And then suddenly it becomes this huge burden because you suggesting the thing are not aware of the actual time. And we're guilty of doing this to ourselves. So, right. I think that's why we're sensitive to it.
Absolutely. But at the same time, we want the dialogue and all that. I hope that, yeah, I mean, you know what? Send us some comments and feedback if that kind of thing makes sense. You know, striking that balance. It's, you know, we can make things that are user-centric, but it still has to come from us, right?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just, there's a thing in the news. Everybody's talking about this Google Plus communities thing, and I didn't know if there was any juice in there. You know, I mean, it's basically, I looked at a few. It's basically a forum. It's like a forum with Google SEO built into it, or it can be completely private if you want it to be. Interesting. Okay. Very interesting, but I don't know if anybody...
Who knows?
Who's using them? Anybody out there using them? Because I've only had time to poke my head in and kind of look around a little bit. LeanIntoArt@gmail.com. So
yeah.
Let's close with, you had some, you know, you have two sections here that make me nervous: Jersey reflection and shareable goals, and Rob reflection and shareable goals.
I don't know. You know, maybe we do that another time. I think we're a bit over our normal plan. So if there's anything that we wanted to share, I mean, you have modeled for us a ton with your journey with the workbook experience. And
I can't help but rope it back to me, which is another thing that was on my list. Be less self-centered.
I don't... that's silly. you're talking silly.
Now, if you read these notes, you'd be like, whoa, Juris, why don't you just make out with a mirror? Jesus. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. That's like, yeah, I mean, exactly. If I had my private thoughts broadcast or whatever, you know, I imagine I would have a quite the anti-fan club or something, you know, whatever. That's what private thoughts are for.
All right. Shadow Wing Tronics saying this is the first he's heard of it, of the Google Plus communities. Go check it out. It's interesting. It's very interesting. Anyway, okay, so we'll skip over our personal bits on this, and we will go to closing. So, hey, if you enjoyed this stuff, folks, we're going to be back. We're going to be back probably around the first week of January. We're going to take a couple weeks off for the holidays, and we're going to recharge our batteries, be with our families, think of some really cool new things to make for Lean Into Art, and then we're going to return. And we're going to be on a biweekly basis. We're going to be doing two shows a month. But we'll have an announcement about, there's a little bit of a twist to it. It's not going to be, there's going to be some stuff in between, but it's going to be kind of some exclusive stuff. All I'll say is subscribe to the newsletter on the Lean Into Art site between now and January, and you won't be sorry. Mm-hmm. So there's already some stuff in there. But it's free. You know, this is one of the free things that we offer, is there's a newsletter in there, Rob writes very, very funny newsletters to send out to people. I need to get my hand in there, too, and start writing some stuff. But so, yes, we will be doing officially in the RSS stream two episodes a month. And in between, we're going to create more products. If you felt that this talk on reflecting and planning was useful, or at the very least interesting, or God willing, compelling, A great way you could let us know would be go to iTunes and give us a star review. It's anonymous. You don't even have to write a review. You just give it however many stars you think we deserve. Or you can go to the YouTube stream that you're watching right now if you're watching live, or if you're watching the YouTube video, you can give us the thumbs up. And that's a great way to help more people discover what we're doing. If you think, I can't be the only one who likes this stuff, well, you know, give us a boost by doing that. If you really want to support us and give us a financial pat in the back, only a few weeks left in the Season of Creative Challenges sale. $10 workshops. $10 for these things. And normal price usually is like somewhere around $50 to $65. So it's a pretty substantial discount on these things. And before we go to our picks of the week of which workshops we're highlighting, any purchase you make, you get 12 or 13 hours of extra content from our Creative Challenges or Creative Topics Variety Pack and the 30-30 keynotes. And in that Creative Topics Variety Pack is a whole bunch of stuff like automating your workflow. Rob does this terrific talk on tools that can help automate your workflow at the desk. And we're not just talking about getting things done stuff. We're talking about real software that can look at your screen and say, hey, whenever you do this, I'll do that for you. If you leave this folder open, I'll do an automatic backup for you overnight so you don't have to worry about where your files are. And then I lead a session, an hour and a half long session, where we just take random experiences, random memories, and word associations and build an entire story out of it together. And it's a huge modeling exercise. If you're the kind of person who says, I don't have a story in me, I don't know how to begin a story, that one should get you off running. You get that automatically built in by purchasing one of these workshops for $10 from leanintoart.com/workshops. And Rob, what ones did you want to highlight this week?
It's super tough to pick because most of the workshops we have are on sale. But I think a couple of that we have not emphasized that much. Well, we mentioned one already in the episode, your FATAM. So making sound effects with Adobe Illustrator. I think, again, it's 4 hours of really in-depth and hands-on. I mean, it's like this combination of the theory and sort of the heuristics and criteria that Jerzy's come up with of how he makes sound tangible as a visual element in the vocabulary of comics. So within panels and dealing with how it plays off of, sound is a variety of kinds of elements. So you could have sound, you know, pure sound effects. You could have the sound quality of the word balloons, and it's and the skill as far as how you execute them within Adobe Illustrator. Right. That even isn't just limited. Those techniques I found very applicable to Manga Studio.
Well, and it's sort of like a design centric and writing workshop as well, in the sense that, like, here's the example I use in my classrooms is like, what sound does the lightsaber make? Laser sword from Star Wars. And every student's going to give you a different sound. Zero, zero. And then some of them are going to do the pzzz, like when it launches, like when they first light it up. Some are going to do the vum vum. Some are going to do the slap noise that it makes. Okay, how do you spell that? Right? What kind of sound quality does it have? Is it like a dead sound quality? Is it like a, or is it like a kabam, kabam, right? And there's different letter arrangements you're going to use to make those different spellings. Now, how are you going to design the letters to reflect the tone, the pitch, the timbre of the sound? What does a wiggly line mean versus a straight line versus a curvy line? What do these things communicate to the reader? What in general sense? And then we get into extra weird areas. What color is that sound? And then we get into another layer. How is this incorporated into the overall design of the page? Is it cohesive with the design that you've done? Does it fit with the actual black and white balance? And when you do the squint test, does it actually flow with the design? Does the color that you've chosen work with the overall color palette that you've got going on the page? There's a lot of decisions in doing good sound design. And I don't want to say that I've completely cracked the nut, but I've thought about it a lot, and I'm really, really happy with that workshop series. So, yes.
Exactly. And it's part of the sale. This is a great opportunity to get it at a discount. Yep. And another one that I think is really well worth checking out. One of the reasons is that we've mentioned this one a bunch of different times. I know, Jerzy, you have taken techniques from it. I know I have taken techniques from it. I have found, so Krishna Sadasivam has a workshop series. I believe it is 4 hours. It's actually split into four chunks. It's not, you know, two hour chunks. And it's a wonderful series about creating crazy characters. And It's essentially character design with a heavy focus on toward cartooning and toward creating really clear communication with how the characters are postured and expressed and how they appear within silhouette and whatnot. And so Krishna's silhouette exercise alone is worth the price of admission. It will influence how you design characters.
Well,
here on out.
His flower sack.
Gosh, the flower sack too.
That one was a huge like punch in the jaw that shook me straight and made me realize that there was something lacking in my figure design, and it really helped me out a lot. As a guy who really tries to strive for fluidity in his character forms, that little technique, it's an old technique, but when you watch Krishna do it, it kind of makes more sense than reading it out of a book. You're watching it come to life. And Krishna, you know, he's got the cred. He's a bona fide teacher. Teaches at the Art Institute of Tampa.
Yeah. Yes, he does.
So he's teaching art there. So yeah, you're getting the real deal when you get it from Krishna. And Krishna's he's a smart and talented cartoonist. So he's at PCWeenies.com, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, creating crazy characters, good pick. So yes, these will be on sale for a few more weeks. And then that's it. Then it's going to go back to normal. We're going to start making brand new products for leanintoart.com. So one last time, leanintoart.com/workshops. Why do we bring it up? Because that's the sponsor of the show. We run the show based on sales of the workshop, so we don't have to worry about getting some sponsor who comes in and says, hey, you really should talk up this crappy product because we're giving you money. And we got to talk about it, right? Now we get to be honest with you because we stand by the products we make. And that's the way you can support it, right? So, hey, Rob.
Whew, Jersey.
You feel cleansed? Do you feel purged?
It was a journey. I feel like I carried a boulder up and down a couple hills. I feel invigorated, but a little tired.
Brace yourself, Sisyphus, because 2013 is going to be more of the same lifting and pushing and pulling.
All right.
But I'm ready to take it on.
Me too.
So thanks, everybody, for this last year of downloading, listening, participating, giving us reviews, and interacting with us. It's been a fun year. Looking forward to the next one. Looking forward to the new stuff we're going to make next year and how you guys feel about it. And don't forget about the favorite podcast flavor meter, which will be embedded in this episode at leanintoart.com. It's a little poll you can take and let us know which format of the show you enjoy the best. And we will look at it, consider it, and it will inform our decisions as we make more stuff for the show. But in any case, happy holidays. Happy winter break, everybody. And I don't know what else to say, Rob.
Well, thank you, Jersey. It's been an awesome year. I look forward to another awesome year. And I appreciate you going on this reflective and I don't know. We look back, we look forward. I love doing that, and I can't wait to see how we iterate in the next year.
Yeah, me too. It'll be cool. Okay, guys. Well, until next year, as they say, like we always say when you're in elementary school. I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I have been Rob Stenzinger, also of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Oh, wait. See, I'm getting rusty already, and then we're still in the flow. Now is the part where I say, okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.